Welcome to the RUF SCAD podcast, where we explore the intersection between faith and creativity. I'm Martin, campus minister here with RUF. Today we've got Sam John. Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Martin.
How's it going?
It's great. It's awesome. I'm ready to be done with this quarter, so
yeah.
Ready for a good break. Yeah.
So, Sam, I've heard you go by a number of different permutations of names since you've been in Savannah. What's your given name? What's your go-to name?
Oh, my go-to name?
Well, both. Given name and then go-to name.
Whew. Given name is, I'm going to do my Indian accent just so it sounds authentic. Varuvelil John George John. And my given name, which is what my mom wanted me to be named when I was born, is Samuel, which is what I go by now as my acting name, Sam John.
So you've effectively answered my next two questions then,
oh, no.
Which is good. So Sam from India, What brought you to SCAD, right, of all places from India? How did you end up in Savannah?
I think it's just the fulfillment of a really crazy, drawn out, I would say courageous and long needed plan, you know, because I remember I was 15 when I switched from wanting to do culinary arts to being like, oh, I want to be an actor. I want to do performing arts. And my parents, who are both doctors, go, oh, that's great. That's awesome, Sam. Good job. And so the next 3 years was convincing them that I can do it. And then I was 18. And then I had to apply to colleges in America because I always wanted to come to America to study. And I applied to 11 universities, out of which SCAD is one of the two that took me. So thank you, SCAD. But yeah, and that's how I'm here. I mean, it was crazy. I never thought in a million years I'd be studying acting, and I'd be almost done studying acting in America, but here we are.
So that sounds like quite a shift from culinary arts to performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get into acting? Maybe that's the question.
So after the whole culinary arts thing, where I kind of let go of that dream because my mom was not too keen, because her dad had been in the business, and it basically means you have no time for your family.
Yeah.
You're too busy building this empire. And she knew that I always wanted to have like a family someday. So she told me, like, it's just not feasible for you. And I had to do a little bit of introspection and think about the one little thing that from when I was young I've always enjoyed, which is being on stage and performing anything. Like, even not even stage, like just being called up in front of like random relatives where other kids would be like, oh, Mom, don't do this to me. I would just start singing, or I would do some little skit or something. So it was just like a finding something that's really stuck and something that I would want to pursue for 4 years, because I feel like there's a lot of distractions that usually take me off the prize. So I knew that I had to have a feasible prize that I also really enjoyed, you know, so that's how I chose it. Yeah.
What was it about performing arts?
The thing that excites me the most about it is the preparation. Most people say it's being on stage, and I love being on stage. It's a rush that I can't even think about. But the idea that I get to prepare for months and months and months to do this really amazing thing is more to me than the final day. I think it's more of me enjoying the process and kind of being like, wow, I'm learning this and this and this by doing this one show, but it's taking me from this level to the next level, which is, I just really thought it's something that I would love to pursue, and something that I just, because there's not been a moment in time when I was performing, even at the worst moments, where I was like, oh, here's a 2 second role, Sam, we need you. I was like, you better be ready for the best 2 seconds you've ever seen, you know? So there's not been a second where I regret anything that involves performing. So yeah, it was pretty difficult, but clear choice, because going to wedding receptions, most Indians who are listening to this will be like, oh, we know what he's talking about. Because everyone goes, comes up to you and goes, what are you doing with your life? And for me to say acting, took a minute. But yeah, my parents, I gotta give kudos to them, because after I kind of, no, because they had a valid doubt in like, can you do this for the rest of your life? Because the industry is not very kind to outsiders, or were typecast or whatever. And so for them to look out for me, I still owe a lot for them to kind of, because they made me realize the realistic expectation. But for them to then see that I really love it and then support it by sending me to America, kudos to them too. Because I don't think, there are very few parents who are sending their kids from India who have not had many acting gigs up till then to America to pursue a degree in that. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there any performances that come to mind when you think about like pivotal moments where you knew that acting was something that was for you, either film, TV, any mediums?
There are just so many, but there's one that really stood out. Shout out to Bethany High School right here. Because I remember I was cast for the musical in my 12th grade. And I had given like this really powerful audition. I had prepared four pieces, like one piece from Hamilton, one piece from Shakespeare, all that stuff. And I was fully prepared, gave it my all. And I got like this 1.5 minute role, right? And initially I was super upset. I was like, why? What is happening here? This is not right. This isn't right. But I made sure that I practiced that 1.5 minutes every day nonstop to the point where people are like, why are you doing this? I'm like, because I love this. This is what I love doing. And that 1.5 minutes on stage made the entire 2 months of practicing a 1.5 minute piece worth it, you know?
Yeah, so. Man, that dedication is beautiful. Love
Thank
it.
You, Martin. Love it. Appreciate it.
I think one of my favorite stories for as long as I've known you, I hardly remember it, but I love it from your perspective of how we met.
All right. Okay. So it was my freshman year. It was back in the day, during my freshman year at SCAD. So I knew that my sister was very insistent that I plugged in. And my whole family were like, plug into a community group. It's important. And I got here. And initially, I was not a big fan of that idea. But I also was like, wow, I should. Because I want to have a community. I want someone I can talk to, people I can be with. And so SCAD organized this thing called Fall Fest every year where the clubs come and set up tables and share their ideas, pitch, all that good stuff. I come to the fest, and I'm looking for another church group, not RUF. I wish I was looking for RUF at the time, but so this other church group is not there. And I see fellowship on one of the boards, and it's all like the Reformed University Fellowship. And I go up to them and be like, is this other church here, like this other church group? Which in hindsight wasn't the best question to ask another church group. But I remember very clearly Martin standing there and doing the most, and I'm going to say this because I'm Indian, I can say this, the most Indian sales pitch ever, where he goes, we're not, I just gave you an Indian accent, sorry.
You can do that.
He
goes, artistic license, yes, that's right. Yes.
Martin goes, they're not here, but we are, and we're Reformed University Fellowship. And from that moment, I knew, okay, all right, this is what's up. This was that. Because I say it's the most Indian thing, because if you relate to this, if you're Indian, you go to a store in India, suppose it's like a restaurant, and you ask for the nearest Chinese restaurant. They won't tell you, oh, it's just down the block. They'll be like, we can make something similar. Just pour something on there, it becomes that. Welcome to our restaurant. I'll just take a seat. It's fine. And that's how you become a savvy businessman or / woman in India.
I just pretend to take the credit for that.
Oh, you definitely should.
Like I was contextualizing 100%.
On purpose. 100%.
Yeah. That's the narrative that I'll subscribe to. Absolutely.
You need to take credit on that, Martin.
I have your blessing.
Oh, 100%. Without a doubt.
So you've been here a few years now, Sam. You know, one of the things that we are trying to cultivate in RUF, at SCAD, especially with this podcast, is thinking about this intersection of creativity and faith. You know, for you as a Christian, do you feel like there's sort of a pivotal moment that you look to as far as kind of shaping faith, like what that looks like in your story?
I truly think this year that was in my mind set up to be the worst year of my existence, because there have been a lot of stuff that was just plaguing me and making things really tough, and COVID, which means I couldn't go home at all. I had the mindset, which is kind of understandable in hindsight, that this would be the worst year ever, but it, as somehow through the grace of God, turned out to be the best one, because I've had these moments where I can see him at work. I mean, there's one instance which started this whole process where I was very worried because I had just had my last salary from the museum and the museum had stopped working. And I work at the SCAD Museum. This is, yeah, before COVID. And then the museum had closed due to COVID. And I remember I had $324 in my bank account and I had to go to the emergency room for a treatment for my ear, which was really messing me up. So I had to get it done. And I remember I was so nervous because it looked like it was going to be thousands of dollars. And then I call my insurance company and they say, oh, we've covered all that. And the cost after covering everything is $320, no, $304, leaving me with $20 to spare for anything I may need. And it, my friend John often tells me is that it's just providence, you know, it's that exactly what you need plus a little bit more to get through this situation. And that was a big turning point for me. It was the point where I really wanted, I had intent to, my whole life I was brought up Christian. My grandparents were Christian, which is very rare in India. But I feel like I've actually been connected to God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit only in the last 80 days. I mean, I've changed so many things about my life. And there's just this sense of content with whatever I have. Because I just feel like, again, my friend John told me this, to remember this verse. Every time I feel like the day is just killing me and every day is going to be the same, it's that his mercies are new every morning, you know? And that's such a big deal for me because sometimes I just feel like the world is falling apart because I feel like I just have no one. And just realizing that he's actually there now by meditating and kind of focusing on his word and actually dedicating some time instead of being like, oh, I'm connected to God through my mother. I'm connected to God through my pastor. I'm connected to God through someone. It's now just I'm connected to God. Mm. And it's a very different feeling. It's made this year easily the best one yet, so...
You know, I feel like the common things for so many of us, I mean, even globally with COVID, is just this sense that, you know, like nothing good could possibly be taking place. We look at circumstantial things and it is hard, and that's the reality we're in. But just to see a picture of God's faithfulness in the midst of that, man, it's just such a beautiful thing to see. It's such an incredible story.
Yeah, and it feels really good to be able to look at myself now and be content and not get angry, because I've just, my whole life I've had these struggles with anxiety, anger, depression, all that stuff, which is very well documented, which is not today's story, but the fact that I can now look at myself in the mirror, and when I want to curse myself out or curse God and be like, why is this happening to me, I can look at myself and just kind of scream these promises to myself and look at myself and be like, you know what, you're doing your best. You're living the best life you can live, and you're content with that. Makes everything so much better. You know, it's a different. I feel like my eyes have been replaced. Yeah, you know, it's a different kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something like, especially, you know, you consider the past 2.5 years for you here. When we say formative, like truly for you, like that's kind of all encompassing. Like you, mm-hmm. not just your craft as an artist, but the person that God is making you into, and the way those two things overlap too. You know, they're not these two distinct spheres, but they actually have a lot to say to each other. So as a Christian going into this industry, performing arts and acting, so what sort of route do you want to go? You know, performing arts, that's kind of broad. What is it that you'd like to do as you sort of narrowed your craft?
So what I'm trying to do right now, I have a dream, but before the dream comes the different routes to get there. Because I'm very clear that I cannot be picky. I mean, it's in my opinion not good for me as an artist to be picky. So I am trying to, so right now I'm pretty well trained in film and TV. I still have to do a couple classes in theater and a couple voice acting classes. And just trying to have unlimited paths, you know. I can't be perfect at everything at this age, but to have these roads that can open because I've mastered or trying to master these areas. The dream, definitely something I've wanted to do for a very long time, is performance capture for video games, because I am blown away by the fact that I can enter that room as me and not anyone else and voice a 50-year-old white man or a 25-year-old black man struggling with the struggles that we see today, you know, just success and trials and joy and life as a father, life as a son, life as different things, but it's me. I don't need to be anything else other than prepare for the role to be that person. And that just blows my mind and it's just amazing.
So Sam, you and I have talked about this a lot because I think this is such an interesting topic. When you think about video games, in some ways, it seems like there's a lot of misconceptions about the medium. Yeah. You know, we think about
big time
film and kind of its infant stages as people were trying to figure out what the medium could actually do. And, you know, video games really within maybe the past couple of decades has undergone, I don't know if we want to call it a transformation, but maybe just a legitimization as an art form.
100%.
So explain how video games of all the mediums captivated you. How did that become the thing that became the dream?
I think the ability to be a character, not just watch, because people always say, oh, I see myself in that film character, or I see myself in this, I see myself in Black Panther, I see myself in Spider-Man, I see myself in this and that and that.
Yeah, right.
I think the fact that, of course, there still needs to be a lot more expansion in terms of the characters we see in video games, the fact that you can literally be the person and you're moving that person and your actions determine the next stage of the game, I think that legitimizes the idea of being a medium so much further. I mean, where do you get the opportunity to actually run through months of a life of a person as the person other than games? And I also think the misstep has been where people refuse to see the good out of it. Because the criticism that a lot of games get nowadays is something that could be levied against any movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are so many things in movies that everyone's like, oh, it's just a movie. Well, this is a game. It's a narrative arc. And I think it's so important to incorporate that at the right times, especially in, like, for me at least, growing up, my parents were very strict about following those age parameters on the games. And I think that's super important. I mean, I'm a big supporter of the fact that you need to be exposed to a medium when you're ready to be exposed to a medium. Because if I was exposed to a game like The Last of Us when I was 13 instead of when I was 19, I would not be in the same mental space that I am today. Because it's such a different... When you're 13 and you're angry about everything, if you look at someone like doing the things that Joel does in the game, you're like, oh, that's justified. That's right. If you're 19 and you're like, oh, I can't do that in real life, it's more of a perspective of, wow, I'm witnessing this creation by... Naughty Dog, by Neil Druckmann, by Troy Baker, and it's just happening. It's not me being, oh, I can do this if I want to, you know? It's this very, it's this idea of it being active, but also passive.
Yeah.
I think that's
it's experiential. Part. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's almost like, you know, we take John Dewey's big postmodern premise with art, that art necessitates the experience in video games. It's like, it brings that to the forefront. Like, in order for the art form to exist, it necessitates experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right, like there's the ongoing debate. You know, Roger Ebert had his big piece towards the end of his life about video games will never be art, which caused all kinds of controversy. You mentioned an interesting one, The Last of Us. Oof. I feel like that was one of the ones that really, I don't know if it brought serious storytelling to the forefront, but it was certainly one of the ones where a lot of people got on board and recognized video games can tell a complex story and can do it well.
Yeah, I think it was part of Naughty Dog's arc as a company, not just... So I think that arc very clearly started in Uncharted 1, when we see scenes of, oh, maybe this lead character is dead, and scenes of, oh my gosh, there are actual stakes to this adventure, all the way to Uncharted 4, which was like a pinnacle where they teased the main character dying, which, of course, spoilers, not going to address that. All the way into The Last of Us era, where it just shattered what people thought games could be. Because the amount of emotions and love... Because the criticism that Part 2 has received is in direct correlation to the praise that Part 1 received.
Yeah,
there are story choices in Part 2 that people really dislike. But they only dislike it because they're so invested in Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any piece of media has been so berated for a choice they made because the people loved Part 1 so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't justify them disliking Part 2 because I go on record saying that was my favorite game of all time, Part 2. I just love it. I think it was one of the best experiences of my life. Spent 24 hours straight finishing that game. But I think it's so important that people were so invested in that. Again, it's all about like this balance because you're so invested in something that you need to be able to see the continuation of that story with an unselfish way, unselfish perspective. If you're like, oh, I just want to love this the way I want to love it, you're not going to see the story, which is what happened to a lot of people, sadly. But again, it's finding that balance of I want to tell a story and I want to tell it truthfully, which is such a big part of how it's inspired me too. So
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing, the games we're talking about here too, you know, think about The Last of Us, Uncharted, those are games that they have some depth. I mean, they're intense, right? If you've ever played, you know that they're tackling some pretty heavy themes.
Yep.
You know, and one of the common critiques from Christians is, you know, like there's objectionable things in those games. There's things that maybe we shouldn't be exposing ourselves to. But at the same time, we can recognize complexity in the Christian life. I'm curious for you, you know, someone going into that industry, like how do you think about those things kind of in conjunction? Like where's the importance in a game like that and what it can offer even to a Christian?
I think it's so incredibly important because life is objectionable. You know, I feel like there's no gray, white and black in life either. Everything is gray. You know, once you start seeing things as this is that, that's where it gets. But that is very much limited to my artistic life. You know, according to what I've learned in the Bible, there is a very clear black and a white, you know, and that's where I need to balance that too. I can't just, because for me, the big thing that the Bible taught me is like growing up, I always had, I don't know why, but so my family, which is just a general thing sometimes, weren't very open to other types of people. Like, I think that's just a normal thing when you're raised in a closed off community, you're not open to a lot of people. I don't know why, but always my entire life, I always kind of went against that because I felt like the Bible was just telling me this message of love where it's like, wow, I have messed up so bad and he still loves me. So I try to put that at the forefront. I know what is right and what is wrong, but I also know that life is never just what is right and what is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like what you're talking about with games. It's like, because there is this complexity in some ways, the experience of that actually helps us kind of put into practice sort of what we recognize as true in the biblical story. It's like we get a chance to sort of try on that in the midst of complexities because the life we live is complex. There's complexities in the world around us.
Yeah, I just think that if we only show what we want to see, there's no point because life is broken. This world is broken, whether we want to admit it or not. The only perfect thing is after this, you know? And I think the fact that we acknowledge that it is broken and are willing to be like, oh, this is the story of someone who is just as broken as I am.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching. I'm not telling my kids to grow up to be like that. Or like, maybe there are choices that I would say not to do. But if you don't know the bad, you don't know the good.
Yeah.
You know, you're so keen on what you've been brought up as good, you never have anything conflicting with that. And for me as an artist, I think that, so that's where I need to, the thing for me is learning that I can't be in control of the script. I can't be in control of what I take up. I mean, I can be in control of projects I take up, which of course I will, once I get the ability to make choices like that, that'll be a priority. But I think what I've realized is most important to me is what I do off camera. It's not just when I'm recording that's, oh, I have to be the perfect, I can't curse, I can't do this. Because sometimes the script requires that. And sometimes the film requires that. Sometimes the story you're trying to tell requires that. Because again, oh, life isn't perfect. Life isn't everything laid out perfectly. So I might be required to do certain things. When the director says cut, if I am treating everyone in that room with respect, if I am treating everyone in that room with love, if I am making all those people feel like I am there to serve them, that's where I feel like my Christianity comes in more than, oh, I cannot pick this role because it does not suit my needs, you know? I think that's become very important to me because I've tried my best to do that on every set I've been on till now. It's like, I'm not here to be the star. I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to show love and be an imitation. Because I think that's something that's really important to me is like bring that out rather than anything else.
Yeah.
It's like showing that I know my values. I know where my values are founded and doing my best to kind of put that out. Because I'll stumble. I mean, I will say this myself. I've stumbled many a times. But being able to acknowledge that and move forward is something that I think is important.
Yeah. And it's like, if there's anything we've seen over the past year, it's like, don't we long to see a world where people are actually able to, even if they don't agree, empathize with the person that they're talking to or about. And it's like, you know, for you as an actor, it's not like you put yourself on pause, but at the same time, you're entering into the experience of somebody else. Mm-hmm. And it's not always an advocation of it, but it's like this practicing of, you know, in some capacity, what Jesus calls us to do is like, we don't suspend what's right and wrong, but perhaps for an instant, we suspend judgment so we can actually connect to a person and yes. love them, not at the expense of what's true, but because of what is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like this medium actually like brings us into that, doesn't it?
It does.
It's like as an actor, but also as a participant when you play a game.
Yeah.
It's like that's actually what you're doing. You're sort of, you're approximating somebody else and understanding what that life would be like.
Yeah, I think just based on what you said, I think empathy is the most underrated thing nowadays. Because it not only makes me sad, but also makes me want to work harder. When I see people, like, whatever your opinion is, kind of just disregarding another person, you know, because that's not going to take us forward at all. Mm-hmm. That's going to further that line between us. And it makes me sad, but also makes me want to go, I want to have conversation with people. Because I see so many of these things, like, don't talk to me if you're this, don't talk. I'm like, well, why don't you talk to them if they're that and find out why they're that?
Yeah.
And why don't you try to bridge that gap instead of just, oh, let's burn it immediately because it makes me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's just my take on the thing.
That's a good word. That's a good word. All right, so to wrap up, Sam, what are the games that have been in your rotation lately? Any recommendations that we need to either know about or talk about? Man. I know that's a big question.
The Last of Us 2. I'm just going to say that again.
Yeah.
I finished that game 7 times now. My friend Kelly thinks it's a problem, but I told her it's fine. And the Spider-Man games, I think Insomniac are just doing the best job in the world with those characters. The new Miles Morales game, which is out on 4 and 5, the PS4 and 5, it is one of the best character works I've seen ever. And it just really, for the first time ever, puts a person of color in a superhero suit and does justice to that character. Mm. They brought in cultural correspondents to help work in the New York Puerto Rican accent between his mother and him. You know, it's such a tribute to what we've become, because back in the days we'd be like, okay, do the thing that's most stereotypical. But now they have cultural consultants, which I think is the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because it actually enables you to tell a good story that is unique and not just, oh, this is great. Because there's this one thing I can tell you about the game, which is not spoilers at all. They have remixed the Spider-Man theme from the first game with rap beats and yeah. to kind of give it that flair. And that is my favorite part of the game, is listening to that song as I swing through snowy New York City. And it's just one of the best, I think it's one of the best superhero games ever, because it is not, I have no problem with a lot of the white characters that have come before. But I think it is the first game that's truly given a black character a platform. You know, it's just incredible to watch. And it just brought, at the end of the game, I think I'm like this at the end of every game. I think Martin is familiar with this. I am a mess. I am an emotional mess after any game. Because it takes so much out of you to do those just 12 hours, but it's still something. And it's just, and I think The Last of Us 2 is just one of the cultural media-based masterpieces of our times. So that is one of the most highly... That's the one thing I recommend to anyone. If you're going to watch anything from my suggestions of La 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 or Ariana Grande, Justin Timberlake, like, This Is Us or The Last of Us 2. The Last of Us 2.
That's the Power Five, right?
There we go. The Last of Us 2 takes it. I mean, it's just... And the feeling... It's the one thing this game made me do is empathize so much more. I tell the story all the time when I played the first game. Before I played the first game, I was a very different person. Because I had this sense of, I'm not just... Because I was growing up in India and back home, there's a very different kind of correlation with the LGBTQ community. And after I played that game, I was like, wow, this may not be what's given in our text as what we do or what we don't do. But to empathize with someone and go and look at that young girl and be like, wow, she is human and she is going through something real, and then continue that in this second game, which is just so brilliantly done, and drive home that concept of empathy is the most valuable thing humans have ever felt, is just unparalleled.
You know me well enough by now to know that fewer things get me as excited about somebody talking about how they were moved by a piece of art, specifically moved to tears.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. Never get tired of hearing that.
Yeah.
wrap up with this. Any hot takes on the PS5 release?
Hot take or just...
Any take. Preferably a hot take, but any take will do.
It's a huge step forward, but also not huge enough for people who aren't very serious gamers. You know, So I've seen the differences, right? And it's kind of a luxury piece for me. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I'm picking it up first day. I was one of those people. But now looking at what's happening, it's like shorter load times, more reflections. I was like, I can do without that for a bit. But it is a piece of... like brilliant hardware, and the best thing about it is that it's so perfectly matched by the Series X, because it's always been a disparity. Like PS3, Xbox 360, Xbox took it. PS4, Xbox One, PS4 took it. This year it is neck and neck, and I am here for it.
That's a nice, safe, that's politically correct answer.
Honestly, I'm the biggest PlayStation fanboy ever.
There it is.
And I think Xbox is still gonna make this as close as they can.
Great closing word. Hey, Sam, thanks for being here. Enjoyed
My pleasure, Martin.
Until next time.